This is Talking Heads. I'm Jeff Pope.
And I'm Gail Binkley.
Gail's the editor of the Four Corners Free Press twice a month. We join you here on the Wednesday morning zine to talk politics in the Four Corners. In the second segment of the show today, we're going to talk education with two members of the Board of Education of the RE1 school district here in Cortez. But right now, we're going to focus on land use and planning and start with the Dolores River Valley Plan and the county commissioners' meeting that happened on Monday. There was a public meeting on Monday that saw a change in the Dolores River Valley Plan, and it's controversial. So do you think it's best to just take a step back and say what the plan is about and how long it's been around, and then what the change is about?
Yeah, that's a good idea. The plan was adopted in 2003, I believe, and was designed to limit density in the river valley with the purpose mainly of protecting water quality. Also, I think of, you know, protecting the character of the valley. That was supposed to be kind of a secondary concern. This plan was developed by a citizens working group that met over about 18 months and included a lot of very diverse people with diverse interests. They came up with an idea to have to limit the density in the river valley to one home per 10 acres, one structure per 10 acres. And they, to allow for some flexibility in this, they decided to adopt what's called a transferable development right system. That's the TDRs that you hear all about. All that means is that if you're a landowner, let's say you had 20 acres and you were going to build a house on your 20 acres, okay, you were allowed to do that. You, theoretically, you could build two because you had 20 acres, but you don't want to build the second house. So you could theoretically sell the right to build that second house to somebody else that had 20 acres and wanted to build three houses.
Hmm.
Okay, so, you know, it was to kind of allow some switching around. So people could sell these development rights without having to sell their land. All right, on Monday, the commissioners decided to scrap that part of the land use code.
That's Section 8, right?
It's Chapter 8, they call it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not a long chapter. And basically get rid of it and get rid of the TDR system entirely. So that was what they did.
And so the context of the meeting on Monday, this has been coming, I would say, for a while. There's been some critique of the plan saying, look, you know, we've had this plan for a while, and there's some of us who want to do something different. And they've been petitioning the county commissioners, who then asked the planning commission, what would you do? And they said, well, we would do nothing. We think the plan is still solid. And there's been that ping-ponging back and forth between the planning commission headed by Dennis Atwater and the county commission. And that's been an interesting political saga unto itself, hasn't it?
Yes. The county commission sent that plan back to the planning commission four times, I think, in all. And each time the planning commission came up with the same answer and said, we really don't think it needs to be changed. This last time they said you could possibly amend it to allow a little higher density near the town of Dolores where people could hook up to a sewer system. Okay. But essentially they said, we think the plan is working fine. Water quality is good in the river. We don't think there's a need for a change. The commissioners didn't agree. And they had a public hearing on Monday. It was very well attended. I would say well over 100 people there. Mm-hmm. And they listened for the better part of the afternoon to comments, then had kind of a very brief discussion. Mostly it wasn't a discussion. It was just them stating their own opinions. And then they voted in the end to do away with Chapter 8 on a motion by Steve Chappell that was seconded by Larry Don Sukla. Keenan Nertel voted against the motion, so it was a 2-1 vote.
If you've just joined us, this is Talking Heads. I'm Jeff Pope, and we're talking about land development, especially along the Dolores River and the Dolores River Valley Plan. Coming up on the show a little later, we'll talk about education here and the RE1 school district with a couple of board members from Cortez RE1 school district. And right now, though, so what does this mean, to have Chapter 8 taken out of the plan?
That kind of has to shake out a little bit. It left the hearing left some people kind of confused. But as best as I can understand, the main effect is, okay, there's no more TDR system, no more trying to trade or
no
sell TDRs, no more platting those or any of that. But the commissioners left in place, at least for now, the 10-acre lot size requirement in the Dolores River Valley. So you would think, well, okay, then really nothing's changed. But the difference is that the rest of the land use code does allow you to build two residences, as I understand it, a main residence and an accessory residence of up to 1,500 square feet on a tract that big. So before you could only have one, now you can have two. So the effect would be to double the potential density in the river valley, not that it's built out at this time.
So that was in the original plan, that idea of two, or is this?
It's in the rest of the land use code for the rest of Montezuma County.
Oh, I see. I see. So Chapter 8 talks about a less dense sort of locale being the Dolores River Valley, and the transferable development rights to help folks who want to have more or less in terms of density. So basically, in some ways, they've just brought the rest of the Dolores River Valley back into the plan of the overall county.
Yes, but except that there is still, the county has a 3-acre minimum lot size, and it's still a 10-acre minimum, at least for now, in the Dolores River Valley. But you can have these two residences, but if you wanted to subdivide your land, you couldn't do that. You couldn't turn a 10-acre tract into 2 5-acre tracts with a house on each. At least that's the theory.
I was recently with somebody who had purchased property here and is, just really thinks a lot about Cortez, owns property in the Roaring Fork Valley and has for their whole life. And this person told me, don't let that happen here, you know, which is basically overdevelopment from Aspen all the way to Carbondale. And was that really the beginning intention around the Dolores River Valley plan, is to think through or get ahead of the development pressures that we could possibly have?
From what I understand, the members of the original working group have said that the thing that triggered the whole process was that there was a proposal being floated for a big luxury resort up the Dolores River. Would have, you know, 1,500,000 square foot clubhouse, an 18-hole golf course, riding stables, 50 stables for horses, 2 bridges over the river, a whole bunch of stuff. And there were concerns about, you know, that the water was going to come from a historic ditch with a very high priority right. It was going to take a fair amount out of the river. They just felt that they needed to get ahead of this kind of a proposal, because the plan in place, they felt, wasn't adequate to deal with things like that. And one of the things I think that hasn't been brought out a lot or isn't well understood is how density could potentially affect water quality, because I don't think people really understand that. But the idea is that let's just imagine hypothetically you had a river valley and it was completely paved in concrete, okay, just completely paved in concrete. Well, you could see that if there was a flood or rain, you know, all of that water is just going to go rushing right off the concrete. Nothing's going to be absorbed. Anything that spills is going to go straight into the river. There's no plants or soil to soak up potential toxins and so on. Okay, that's an exaggerated example. But the way density affects water quality is that the more land that is paved or covered with structures or trampled, where the soil is compacted, then the less the floodplain can act as a sort of a buffer and a way to absorb these different contaminants. That's the theory. So that's one of the reasons, one of the key reasons they said that they wanted to limit density in the river valley.
Proponents of changing the plan have said, look, I want my rights as a citizen of the state of Colorado, private property rights. I want to be able to develop my property any way they want, and which is, you know, understandable. I think that's a sense around anywhere you would buy property in the country. Do you feel like the voices of, in reviewing the plan, which is 10 years old, 12 years, right? I mean, coming up on 12 years old, do you feel like the voices of of both sides have been heard in a public way. And what I'm getting at is process here. You know, that there's a lot of people who say, there's a plan. Why should we go back to it? I am a fundamentalist when it comes to this plan. It will never be changed. This is the work that should never. And there are others that said, you know, things have changed or the mood has changed. And I'm not a fundamentalist. I think we should relook at it. And it occurs to me that the process here, when I go back to the county commission and the planning commission, is there was almost a fundamentalist look at from the planning commission to say, look, we looked at it. We don't want to change it. And the county commission saying, well, we'd like you to take a look at it. And they couldn't come to head. And then the process basically was 100 people in a room, and now the plan has changed. And the asymmetry that I'm talking about is that the first plan took many years to put together and lots of people and lots of impact. And to dissemble it seems like a really different process. And I wonder what the sense is around the community. Do you think about that?
Well, I have no way of knowing what the whole sense around the community is. I know that the people in the audience that turned out were largely in favor of keeping the plan the same. The vast majority of those who spoke were in favor of that, and judging by the applause, it was, yes, the audience was heavily skewed toward those who wanted to keep the plan. And I think that they were frustrated by the process because at the end, Keenan Ertel said he wanted more time to think about this. He had a lot of confusion over the many things that were being said, the many facts. They were kind of talking about that when Steve Chappell just said, well, I make a motion to get rid of Chapter 8. And Larry Don said, yeah, well, I second it. And they voted. And so people were kind of taken aback. And yes, there were a number of people who thought that they should have at least have a study group. In fact, one of the people who came had prepared a bunch of signs for people to hold up that said, no vote without study group. And so they were all waving this, you know, after the motion was made and waving their signs in the air. But, the commissioners voted anyway. It was an interesting thing, and I think historic in a sense, because I've covered the commission for something like 20 years, and I don't think there's ever been an example of a commission rolling back something major that another board had done like this. So, you know, it's kind of a big deal. There certainly were critics who spoke at the meeting, although they were far in the minority. And they said, as you mentioned, you know, that they felt that their freedom was being infringed upon and they shouldn't have to bear the brunt of people's desire for clean water and nice scenery and so on. So, and that was that point of view. And we have a commission that's, you know, very heavily in favor of private property rights and small government. So I think it was a fair prediction that they were going to make major changes in this plan.
We'll keep following this issue, the Dolores River Valley plan and the county commission and the process as things go on. Is there a next step? Do you think we're going to see something quickly happen to take up the issue again?
There are potential issues that they could take up. I mean, they had talked about in the past about reconsidering the 100-foot setback requirement from the river, which is currently still in place. So, but I don't know whether they will. They did leave it intact yesterday.
Okay. If you've just joined us, this is Talking Heads. I'm Jeff Pope here with Gail Binkley. She's the editor of the Four Corners Free Press. We're going to be right back with the second part of the show, and we're talking about education here in Cortez, Montezuma County, the RE1 School District Board. Stay with us. We're back. This is Talking Heads. I'm Jeff Pope.
I'm Gail Binkley.
Gail is the editor of the Four Corners Free Press, and twice a month we join you to talk about politics and issues of import here in Southwest Colorado and the Four Corners area. The second half of the show, we're going to spend talking about education and specifically the Cortez RE1 School District. New budget has been passed for next year, the Priority Improvement Plan. We're heading into year four of that, and it's a good time, really, in the summer, in July, to kind of take a look forward into the next school year. And so joining me today and Gail is Tim Lanier and Jack Schoenemeyer. They are both board members at the Cortez RE1 School District. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for being here, thank you for letting us be here.
You're most welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Tim, can you talk a little bit about some of the accomplishments as a board member that you would see were important over the last year? You identify that the school did well in this last year, the school district?
Yes. Well, one of the most exciting things we're looking at now is the new high school. The walls are going up. It's moving along. It's neat to see this for this community. I think our education process is improving. We're making the right changes. We've got personnel that are working hard. Our staff is working hard.
Jack, you want to add anything?
Well, the one thing that's happened is that we have increased the attendance rate, particularly at the high school. It's not where we want it to be, but it's certainly you can't educate kids if they're not in school. So we do want to encourage all the parents to make sure their kids show up for school, but we're excited at the progress that we've made in that area.
Do you want to talk just a little bit about the budget? I know it's hearing all those numbers is sometimes kind of hard, but how's the budget looking? Up, down? What's it like?
It's very tight. It's it's for all practical purposes about level. School budgets are very complex things because of the fact that we get funding from a variety of sources. The expenditures go in a variety of different directions. So I think both Tim and I understand that that this is really a complex process. For example, if you look at sort of the overall budget, it's in the $44 million, but basically approximately half of that is pass-through money. It's money that either goes to the high school for construction, or it's money that we get for the charter schools, and that passes through the charter schools. And some of there are changes that occur in budgets from year to year. Some of those are dictated by the Colorado Treasurer's Office and the Colorado Department of Education. Some of them are changes that we initiate to try to make the whole budgeting process more transparent. So if anybody has questions, things that they don't understand, why our wonderful Director of Finance, Wendy Everett, is certainly happy to explain. Let me give just one quick, simple example. Some people were concerned about the fact that it appeared we were cutting the budget for the Manaw Elementary School, but that was really just a function of the fact that the Montessori program, which consists of approximately 20 children, will be moved to the new Montessori Charter School, and so we lose the per pupil funding for those plus the plus one teacher.
So essentially, you that moved from being in the budget as it usually would, in that sort of $22 million side, and it moved to the other $22 million, the pass through side, where Southwest Open School or this new charter school, and the pass through money, kind of goes. And so it wasn't necessarily a budget cut. It's just something that got moved over.
It's right. It's funding children, but it's not funds that go to our general operating fund.
If you've just joined us, this is Talking Heads. I'm Jeff Pope here with Gail Binkley, who's the editor of the Four Corners Free Press. And we're talking about education here in the RE1 school district in Southwest Colorado. That's the Cortez Montezuma Cortez School District. Our guests are Tim Lanier and Jack Schoenemeyer, who are both board members. We're talking about the budget and heading into the new school year and priorities around that. A budget is often a way of prioritizing what the next school year will look like. It's a process. A budget is always a process. But when you finally get one, isn't it often that lays out what the priorities are going to be? What would you say the priorities as reflected in the budget are for this next year, either one of you?
Well, most of the budget is for personnel, you know, so there's not a lot of you know, you've got your lights, utilities, those types of things that we really can't change. So there's not a lot to play with, mm-hmm. a lot to change.
One of the things, Tim, if I can jump in, where we have increased the budget is for exceptional student services, and we feel that's important. We'll have some additional paraprofessionals, people that are actually working directly with the children in need. One of the things that's happened is that the cost of medical care, drugs, and so forth has increased, and this is of course a cost that we absorb, and every school employee gets that. So it you know, it is quite tight.
You know, and with our insurance, we have a self-insurance pool, which is very complicated and complex and hard to understand, and that plays a big part of our budget.
Well, I'm sure that's true. You know, one of the things that people say a lot in the community and are always concerned about, I think, is teacher salaries and how they compare to, you know, other districts in the area.
Or out of state.
Or out of state.
We're so close to, you know,
yeah,
three
exactly.
Other states, right?
On the reservation and so on. How is RE1 doing in that regard?
It's a struggle. You know, we're one of the lower, starting salaries is one of the lower districts in the area. We're also the lowest funded district around us. Every other district gets more funding by quite a bit than we do.
Is that a result of the ratchet down from Tabor Gallagher? In the choices that we make locally, or a function someplace else?
Well, it's largely a function of mill levy overrides. In other words, if we look, for example, at Dolores and Mancos, they receive considerably more per pupil than we do. But both of those communities have passed mill levy overrides, and we never have.
What do you say to the argument that I got a good education and, you know, that it costs a lot less? You know, money doesn't make good education.
I agree to some extent that money is not the answer, but it does make a big difference in the kind of staff you can hire, the quality teachers you can hire, the exceptional student services, the counselors that... You know, it's a different world that we live in now than we did 20 years ago. A lot more social problems. You know, the schools are being expected to do more with our students than they used to have to. Hmm. And so when we try to do all these things, there's just not enough money to fund all these programs, everything that kids need nowadays.
Yeah. And you know, teachers... It's a competitive market for both teachers and administrators, and you know, as you mentioned, we're four states and a reservation nearby, but particularly young teachers can be attracted to teaching jobs literally anywhere in the United States, and many of us have friends with children or grandchildren who teach abroad. So it's an extremely competitive business, and we want to be able, we have some wonderful teachers, but we want to be able to hold on to them.
If you've just joined us, this is Talking Heads. Jeff Pope here with Gail Binkley, who's the editor of the Four Corners Free Press, and you're hearing the voice of Jack Schoenemeyer and Tim Lanier. They're both board members at the Cortez RE1 School District. Looking ahead to the next school year and talking about the budget and some of the challenges and opportunities. One last question, Gail.
I'm just wondering, how much of a boost is it going to be to have the new high school in place? I mean, what kind of a difference is that going to make to attracting teachers and retaining teachers and improving student morale?
Well, I think just having a new facility will make a difference. I think kids are excited. I think teachers will be excited to be in this new facility. And as long as we can continue to fund them and work towards salary increases for them, and we've got a principal that working hard and staff at the high school to make sure that more kids graduate, I think it'll be a big boost for the area and for the kids.
And it will really show the kids who will be attending that this community cares about them, that it values education. I think that's really critical. The school will have the latest in technology. It'll have a wonderful auditorium, first-class classroom. So it I think it will be a great boom to this community and of course, most directly to the kids that we're helping educate.
Are there tours going on? Can people have a look and see what's happening there?
I think you can take a tour right now. I think they're asking not to because of structural steel going up and how dangerous it is when that structural steel is being moved around. But they will have later on, they will have tours and opportunities for people to go and look.
There's also, if I can interrupt, there's also a wonderful website that the school district has. And if people will go to the school district and look under the MCH building project, there's a weekly update there. It has generally four or five pictures of what's going on, and it also tells what specifically activities are going on and how they're and what's going on. Tentative or proposed 2014-2015 budget is also on the website with a lot of other useful information.
So people can go see the budget for themselves, get an interpretation by calling your staff if they have questions, and also check out the new building.
Absolutely.
Right.
We'd sure like to have you guys back and spend a little more time unpacking things as the school year becomes clear. So hope that can happen in the next couple of months. Thanks for being here. That's Tim Lanier and Jack Schoenemeyer. They've joined Gail Binkley and I here on Talking Heads. Gail's the editor of the Four Corners Free Press. Stay tuned to KSJD for all your news, information, and entertainment. We'll be back next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.